This is with Donna Marie Doherty on Highland Radio. The kids are in charge to explore all things sustainable. Ours to Protect is funded by Commission Amman with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Highland Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland.
Good evening, it's Donna Marie Doherty here and I am so happy to be welcoming you back to the first episode of Ours to Protect 2. As many of you will know, we've had a year-long project that wrapped up last year on all things sustainable and we're back and this time the kids are in charge. So here's how it's going to work. I'm calling on you, the brilliant young minds of Donegal, to tell us oldies how it's done. So send me your voice notes or your questions to donnamarie@highlandradio.com or you can send a voice note on WhatsApp to 086 60 25000 and that will be for a chance to feature on the next episode. I'll be here with you on the second Wednesday of every month after the 8 o'clock news. So let's kick off now with our first topic, which is biodiversity. I got talking to Tara, Freya and Sophie and here's what they had to say on the topic.
Lots of people are like trying to do stuff and like this is all about trying to do stuff, but have we really like done better? Like have we gone from like better to worse to better, or like better, or like worse?
What is the plan for the, what's the action plan for the biodiversity?
Yeah.
And how much have adults messed it up? And how, like, how much did adults mess it up? And how much better have we done since then?
Julie Corey is the Biodiversity Officer with Donegal County Council and I had a great conversation with her based on what I heard from the young people around the county. Owen McDonough's a TY student in Milford and he had some really interesting questions which steered the conversation.
What role do young people have in raising awareness about environmental issues and biodiversity?
I think young people have such an important role because, you know, they're the next generation and we need them to grow up now aware of how to live in harmony with nature. I was just thinking, actually, you know, our grandparents or my grandparents, my age group, you know, they grew up a bit immersed in nature, outdoors, and they didn't waste anything. And, you know, and in their lives, they didn't really go about harming anything. But it's a different world now. So I suppose they need to learn about, you know, how to have a home that's environmentally friendly, how to have a garden that's more environmentally friendly. There's lots of stuff they can learn at school through green schools and different programs. And then as young people get older, then it's important then that they've got that background so that as decision makers and purchasers, you know, they're making informed choices. So as I say, young people, it's really important and they've got a massive role to play because they also listen to each other more than they listen to us old people. So if peers are campaigning to their peers on being more environmentally aware, I think it rings true more.
This brought me back to a point made by young Tara.
Like we said, schools should be teaching it, you know, and then maybe, like, children shouldn't have to teach their parents that. Maybe they could be like, oh, we learned about this at school, and, like, can we maybe plant, like, a few flowers in the garden? Like, buy a few packets of seeds for, like, €2, plant them in the garden, and, like, help the bees, and, like, you know, can we do that? And, you know, and then we can plant them, and then the bees will come, they'll get the pollen, they'll pollinate everything, like, and it'll just, you know, everyone should do their part.
Judy agreed and said in many cases it's the kids that's doing the teaching.
It's definitely peer pressure and mummy pressure is really important. So everything from, you know, trying to cut your grass a wee bit less. So we're in Mo May at the moment. So trying to teach children and children learn at school about the importance of just basic wildflowers in your lawn. If we cut the grass a wee bit less, then that will help the bees. And if they're going home and pester power gets mummy and daddy to cut the grass a bit less, then all the better.
How can we engage with local governments and organisations to promote wildlife protection efforts?
It'd be brilliant to get more youth involved in the organisations that are already out there rather than, you know, set aside as their own. However, you know, Youth Voice and organisations like that are fantastic. But there's so many groups you can get involved with. So like in a local village or town, there'll be a Tidy Towns group. And those Tidy Towns group are just really need that injection of youth and enthusiasm and ideas. So they could join up with Tidy Towns groups and run projects, whether it be making bee boxes, bird boxes, organising bat walks, doing some planting sessions together. That would be a really simple, straightforward thing to do. Or they could team up with local sports clubs to, you know, to explore what work can be done there. So there's a thing called Green Clubs. So through their local sports club, they potentially could tap into some funding and plant trees around their Gaelic pitch. You know, there's lots of things they could do. And on their own as well, they can campaign and they can lobby for change. So they definitely can engage with us at the council as well. I would love to work with more groups, more youth groups. And if they have any bright ideas, I can maybe see if I can help them bring them through to fruition.
And I suppose the young people, or the advantage that young people have in that, is that they're very tech savvy and social media savvy, so that's, they could use that to their advantage.
Young people definitely have that advantage, and that's certainly one that I'm not 100% fully understanding yet. But definitely, you know, with the smartphone these days, you can do so many innovative things. So we could run competitions, photograph competitions using smartphones. So it would encourage people to get out and actually really look a wee bit closer about what wildlife's in their own garden. We, through the council, can support young people to do that by, you know, doing a bit of ID work and raising awareness about how they can figure out what the names of the different butterflies are in their garden. They could use TikTok and other platforms to create, you know, influential videos about the work they're doing with their communities. And they could just post pictures, I suppose, of the local special places that they live, investigate maybe, you know, the names of their townlands, and very often those are linked to the landscape that they're in. So there's loads of different ways, but I think, again, the young people need a lead on that, because they have best place to understand how they can use technology better.
I was really interested whenever I heard Julie mention the Green Clubs programme, because the GAA is central to community and culture here in Ireland. And for a lot of young people, it's a home away from home. I had a nose. And as you could guess, Donegal was bang slap in the middle of all crack. The Green Club programme was set up essentially to make facilities more sustainable and adopt the mindset. It's centred around energy, water, waste, biodiversity and travel and transport. And I was on the website, as I was saying there, I had a look, and from what I can see, Donegal County Council is the only local authority, or only local council, that's listed on, they have a big list of partners. It includes Ishka Éireann, the SEI, loads of like governing bodies, and the council is the only one there that I can see anyway that's a local authority on that list. And then I carried on having a browse of the website, and they have a load of case studies. They have ones for each of the themes, but I just went on to the general case studies to have a peruse. And as you'd expect, two of the general case studies, two of the three that are listed there, are locals. So one of them was Buncrana GAA and the other was the Strabane Segersons. Buncrana's main goal was to upgrade the floodlights there to LEDs. They also installed solar panels to supply their clubhouse with hot water. They took a look at their waste management, and they also linked in with community projects including beach cleans and the protection of bees locally. And then the Strabane Segersons, some of the actions they carried out, the first thing they did was planted 150 trees, which is class. They banned and phased out single-use plastic bottles. And then the last thing they did was they let the grass behind their goalposts grow wild. And this kind of leads into a thing called the ecological footprint. And Owen had a question about that for Julie.
What are some simple changes we can make at home to reduce our ecological footprint?
There's so many things you can do. And again, you know, ecological footprint and carbon footprint kind of go hand in hand. So things like growing your own food, that if you do that in an organic way, that means then you're bringing less chemicals into your garden. And then the knock-on effect would be you don't really want to use chemicals in your garden, because they can have, you know, a negative impact on the food you're growing. So that sort of goes hand in hand. One of the other really simple things you can do is, if you need to buy compost, buy peat-free compost, because if you buy peat-based compost, that's putting pressure on our very precious boglands. Or even better, why not make your own compost? So again, that sort of comes back to the circular economy of reusing our own waste to make a product. There's other really simple things they can do, like planting flowers in any flower beds or pots for bees and for butterflies. And as I said earlier, no more May is upon us. And it's such a simple thing people can do at home, is to just cut the grass less. It allows more native flowers to flourish, and it's also using less diesel or petrol in their mower. So it all those wee simple things really do help.
And that moves us nicely along onto another thing me and Julie were chatting about, which was No Mo Me and the bees. But firstly, let's get back to the girls and their thoughts on bees and why we shouldn't be afraid of them.
All the bees are people are scared of bees, but actually the bees are scared of them. That's why they sting you. And then they die, and then there's not much bees left because, lots of them die.
They just want the flower.
And they don't want to sting you. They just want the pollen.
So leave it alone.
Yeah, they just think you're a flower.
Bees aren't really, good, seers. They can't really see stuff and they can't really hear stuff. They communicate with, dancing because, they can, sense, the movement in the air. And that, bees communicate with dancing. So if you move around trying to spot the bee, that's not going to help because they're going to think, oh, this guy's trying to attack me. And then they're going to go, self-defense. So just either, stay still and, just don't let it do its thing.
You don't even need to be scared of it because they're teeny weeny tasty wits.
Very wise words indeed there from the ladies. There is many types of bees in Ireland, though. Julie kind of gave us the lowdown on how you can identify them and what each of the different bees do.
There's loads of different bees. So everybody, when you say bees, thinks of honeybee, but actually there are 100 different species of bee in Ireland and only one of them is the honeybee. So there's lots of bumblebee species. There are bees we call solitary bees, so basically live on their own. And those three groups of bees make up that 100 species of bees. So the honeybees are the one most people sort of identify with. They're the ones that make honey from the nectar and they live in hives. And they're actually really happy to live in hives made by people too. They make the honey and use it for food for themselves, but then they make quite a lot of it. So humans eat it too. So it's a relationship that goes well. The bumblebee is a wee bit different. It's the big, fat, cute, furry one with stripy body. Now, how we tell them apart as scientists is to do with the colours on the bumblebee and also the number of stripes. So we actually have to identify them by the colour of their tail or their bums. They're fantastic wee species and they're really important as well. Just like the honeybees and all their solitary bees, they pollinate our food. So without them, we wouldn't have yummy strawberry flavoured ice creams or tomato ketchup for our food.
And a lot of people can be afraid of bees, but it's rare enough that they would sting.
Well, again, it's all down to the species. So there's a wee bit of a difference there. So honeybees only sting the once. They're the ones that lose their sting if they do sting. Bumblebees can sting over and over again. But here's the bit. Don't be worried about them. Bumblebees are very gentle creatures. And unless you threaten them, they won't attack humans. So the advice I always give is if you don't chase them, they'll leave you alone. But if, for example, you're outside on a lovely warm day and you're wearing a yellow t-shirt or a purple t-shirt or whatever, and a bee comes and lands on you, it'll soon realise you're not a flower. You've got no pollen or nectar and off it'll go. But like any wild creature, if you corner it or endanger it, it might try and attack you back.
And what can be done to help bees, especially now in the warm weather?
There's so many things you can do to help the bees in your garden. And again, that's honeybees and bumblebees. But simplest things and cost no money is to just let the grass grow a wee bit longer in places. So if you've got a garden where you can let a corner grow wild, that'd be great, leaving that little patch. So there's campaigns called No Mo May and Let It Bloom June. And the idea is to just let little bits grow on further. And then very soon you'll see wildflowers, so not things that we sow, things that are already in the ground will flower. So things like clover, things like our dandelions, which we love to hate, but actually they're fantastic and a very important plant for bees. And if you let it grow a wee bit longer, you might be lucky enough to have stuff like cuckoo flower and later in the summer knapweed. And if it's wet, other lovely species of Irish native wildflowers. It's only by letting the grass grow that you'll realise that's there. And then it's really simple. You cut it at the end of the summer and do it all over again next year. It helps save the bees, but it also means you'd have spend less time grass cutting too. There's loads of other things you can do. If you don't have a big garden or you've only small space, you can do planting pots for pollinators. So again, picking plants that are really good for bees. Everything from herbs like lavender to you know, see, so flowers that you sow out from seed. There's a fantastic website, pollinators.ie, and on that website there's loads of resources and leaflets and information and ideas of how to do better for your bees in the garden.
And is there other pollinators outside of bees?
In Ireland, our main pollinators are bees and hoverflies as well. So hoverflies look a wee bit like wasps, but they don't sting. But butterflies can help pollinate our Irish wildflowers, and also wasps do their bit too. And that's just in Ireland. In other countries, different species do the pollination. So if I'm ever out speaking to kids in schools, I ask who likes bananas, and very often a lot do. But bananas are actually pollinated by bats in warmer countries, and chocolate as well. So chocolate comes from the cacao tree, and they're pollinated by midges. So it depends what country you're in, what's doing the pollinating. But here in Ireland, it's mainly our bees and our hoverflies.
The last thing that I asked Julie about was what plans are in place to protect biodiversity in Donegal, and if there's any child-friendly versions, because let's face it, pages and pages of writing can even be tricky for adults to get through.
So at the minute, Donegal are working on their own biodiversity action plan, and when we do have that ready, we're going to do a more child-friendly, easy-read version as a poster. So hopefully next year, if you ask me that question, we'll have it ready. But at the minute, if you go on to the pollinators.ie website, the All Ireland Irish, you know, the pollinator plan, that's fantastic resources. They have a junior version of it, and it's fantastic for schools. It has jokes in it, it has bite-sized bits of information about how children and can through at home and at school look after bees in their garden. So it's definitely worth checking out.
The junior pollinator plan is absolutely fantastic. I had a look through it, and here's some of the fun facts that I learned. Bees' favourite colour is purple. For a strawberry flower to turn into a strawberry, it needs to be visited 5 times by a bumblebee or 15 times by a honeybee. And that is just for one flower to turn into a strawberry on a strawberry plant. Back on the topic of stinging, boy bees cannot sting. Only girls can. So if you've ever gotten stung by a bee, it was a girl. We'll have a link to the Junior Pollinator Plan and everything that we've mentioned throughout the episode so far on the Iris Protect section of our website. I'll remind you about that again before the end of the programme down the line. And now, of course, biodiversity doesn't just stop when it comes to bees. It includes all of nature, from plants to hedgehogs to elephants. And here in Donegal, birds are a very important part of that. We're home to many, many birds, and some of them are endangered. Tara, Freya and Sophie told me about a school trip that they were on, and on this trip they learned about birds who made their nests on land in the Mahri. Here's what they had to say about that.
They put up fences because birds from different all around the world would come here, they'd migrate and like lay their eggs. However, they had to put a fence up to keep the foxes out, because the foxes would come searching for the eggs. And they also said it's very important if you're walking up the Mahri to put your dog on a leash, because many times dogs have like found the nest, found the birds, they startle the birds, they don't eat, the dogs don't mean to do this, but they startle the birds and the birds fly away without their eggs. And then like they startle the birds and the birds fly, 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 and then they can't find their eggs, and then the birds don't have their mother anymore. And sometimes they tramp, and sometimes walkers would trample the eggs, and like you just have to be very careful when you're walking up there, because there's wildlife all around.
I didn't really know an awful lot about birds that did nest on the ground. So I got speaking to Angus Kennedy, and he told me a bit more about that in general and where we can find them in Donegal.
Lots of different birds that nest on the ground, absolutely, yeah. We've probably about, there's a little over 200 species of bird that breed in Ireland, and most of those breed in Donegal. And typically that's it. We think of the big bowl of a nest that's high up in a tree, but only some birds do that. The robin will often nest very low down in a little ditch, in a hole in the ditch. Could be right down at ankle level. The willow warbler, one of our most common migratory birds, over 1 million of them come in, they pour into the country, and they're singing everywhere at the moment. They nest very low down, and it's they're relying on camouflage. But the birds, I think, that your folk were talking about were birds that specialise on those kind of sand dune systems, and they nest on the ground.
And where I suppose would we find them nests then around Donegal?
Well, if you go to any beach or any sand dune that isn't completely run over with people, with quad bikes and the rest of it, you'll often hear the skylark. And you'll hear that little bird before you'll see it. And you'll hear this song that goes on and on and on. It's a beautiful little song high above us. And when you think a bird that's nesting out in the sand dunes, it can't perch up in a bush or in a tree and announce its presence. Because that's how birds protect their territory. They protect their territory by singing. They sing to the other males of the same species to say, this is my patch. And the skylark, it goes high up into the air. It's got the longest song of any bird. And it sings and sings for up to 4 minutes way above us. And then it'll drop down and it'll disappear into the long grass near its nest, and then it'll scurry off to its nest. So you wouldn't see the nest unless you pretty much stood on it.
There's some very special birds in our county, but sadly they're at risk of becoming extinct, meaning they're endangered, or in other words, they're nearly all gone. According to Ireland's National Biodiversity Data Centre, these are the most top 10 endangered species in Ireland. They're the Atlantic salmon, the white skate, the European eel, the thrift clearwing, freshwater pearl mussels, the twite, the great yellow bumblebee, the alpine saxifrage, and the wall, which is a brown butterfly, and the curlew, which is a bird we find here in Donegal, which Angus did tell me more about.
There's a lot of our birds. Unfortunately, an awful lot of our birds, and particularly our shore birds and those ground nesting birds. And it mightn't necessarily be along the coastline, because there's some birds that will nest on the big flat sandy dunes, which is the macker, that's called macker habitat. And it's an amazing habitat. It's unique to the west coast of Ireland and the west coast of Scotland. It doesn't exist anywhere else. And if you think from a Donegal context, if you think of, say, Ballyliffin, all that flat area behind the sand dunes there, or if you think of Ards, those big flat areas with lots of flowers, or maybe around by Port Arthur and Gweedore, and those kind of areas, those big flat sandy plains, as long as there's enough long grasses, there's a lot of different birds that will nest in there, corncrake included, and birds like lapwing and redshank and dunlin and whatnot. Their numbers are an awful trouble because we've turned a lot of these places into golf courses. We practice our driving over them. We turn them into football pitches. Or in some cases, we overgraze them and we put on too many animals. And then there isn't enough ground cover to protect those little nests.
And then I suppose for children who are hearing this and are interested in it, where can they learn more about birds and how to protect them?
There's loads of different places. At the moment, there's a couple of fantastic schemes going on. There's the Corncrake Life Scheme is one. And if people look up on the internet, the Corncrake Life Ireland or just Corncrake Ireland, and they'll see about the great work that these people are doing. What they're doing is they're engaging with landowners and they're helping them to come up with a plan to be able to, because everybody, when they hear about these things, wants to help, as long as they can be financially helped as well, because sometimes it can be expensive to put up the correct type of fencing or to plant the right type of crop. So they're engaging with the landowners and working with landowners to do it, and they're having great success. The corncrake numbers are actually coming up a little bit from a very, very low number, which is brilliant. There's another great scheme called the Life on Macker scheme, Life on Macker. So if people look that up, and they'll find they'll have all sorts of resources and they have an education pack coming out soon and whatnot. And then there's a new one that's just started called the Breeding Wader Programme. And waders are those kind of shore birds that wade through the muddy places and the wet places in the Breeding Wader Programme. So there's a lot of different schemes going on in Ireland at the moment, which are really trying to help. And of course, I should remember to mention Birdwatch Ireland. Birdwatch Ireland have just created a new app, and it's a free app for anybody and everybody. It's a fantastic thing, and it gives you a huge amount of information about all of our breeding birds, where to find them and what they look like and so on.
Perfect. And you do your own stuff as well, don't you, with Nature Northwest?
I do indeed, yeah. So Nature Northwest is the name of my little business, and I'm in schools every day, and I do various different walks and talks. In fact, for Biodiversity Week now, we'll have a couple of dawn chorus walks. We'll be getting up before the birds, heading off to Glenveagh, and as the birds start to wake up, we'll be trying to identify them and figure them out. You'll find all of those kind of events and the different things I do on naturenorthwest.ie. But just today, I was in a school, local school in Milford, not very far from where I live here. The students were able to name off over 20 birds that live around them. And then we were listening to some of those willow warblers that were in some of the nature areas in around Milford Town. And some of those ground nesting birds we were listening to too. It was lovely.
When it comes to working with young people and nature, there is no better person to talk to than Angus. And he thinks that with young people leading the way, positive change can come about.
They love it. It's so easy to engage young people. It's so easy to engage most people, I find, with nature, but particularly young people. They've no inhibitions, they've very little fears, and they just love it. Even the children who don't normally go out and about, within a couple of minutes, they're very comfortable.
I suppose it's great as well for them to get a break from the classroom and to get to see things, I suppose, like in real life, instead of looking at it in a book or on a screen.
Well, completely. And it brings it to life. Just today, we were doing bug hunting and we were tapping whin bushes, or gorse bushes, as they're called down the country, and the amount of bugs that were falling out of them. And the children were fascinated by this. A lot of them had never seen weevils. They hadn't seen those kind of spiders. And then we went and tapped some hawthorn trees, literally tapped them with sticks and the bugs fall into trays. And a completely different set of bugs were falling into them. And it starts giving them a little bit of an understanding of how much life is out there.
And just on that point, whenever you think of the word biodiversity, you can break it up into two words. Bio, which means a living thing, which includes plants, and diversity, which means different types. So different bugs and animals will like different plants and bushes to have as their homes and for where they get their food. And that's why it's so important to have different kinds of plants all around. Here's some climate news that came out in the past month. The EU's Climate Monitoring Service says last month was the sixth warmest April ever recorded in Europe. Across the world, it was the second warmest April, only behind 2024. And Europe's now the fastest warming continent in the world. So that was in a UN climate report, and it found that last year was the warmest year for the continent and also saw the most widespread flooding since 2013. Local authorities, which here that means Donegal County Council, could soon have more wind farms and solar parks in their areas. So there's new rules that each region will have to host a certain amount of renewable energy projects such as wind turbines. And that's part of the government's plan to keep the country's climate obligations in sight. And that's according to the Irish Independent. And finally, one in four people say they want to drive less to help reduce carbon emissions. A recent study by the ESRI, which involved 1,200 adults, found a quarter didn't realise the impact their car has on the planet. The figures that were got from the CSO, which is the Central Statistics Office, shows that lots of car journeys by car were only to cover short distances. I have one last piece of housekeeping to do. It's a question, really. Do you want to learn how to map climate change in your area through sound? So we here at Highland Radio have partnered with the IBI and the Institute for Climate Sound and Society, Harvard, and we would really love for you to get involved. So what I'm looking for is organisations or schools or community groups that involve young people to make recordings of the sounds in their area over the next few months. We'll provide the equipment and the expertise. Essentially, we'll have a recording device and we'll put it into a tree to see what kind of wildlife we can hear. It's really cool research. I went to training in Dublin and Dr. Cara Oler from the Institute of Climate Sound told us how they had audio from a particular coral reef, and then that reef had suffered a hurricane and it was destroyed in it. After the hurricane, then a lot of the marine life that was there had disappeared. They left because their habitats were destroyed. So the scientists started to play the audio that they had recorded of that coral reef back, and it started to attract the native wildlife back. They also realised that whales essentially have their own way of saying hello, and they captured the sound of a whale saying hello, and then that was played. And they actually played it to the whale that said it by accident, and it actually really spooked the whale. And that was how they learned that each whale has its own way of saying hello. So it'd be the equivalent if every time I said hello, I said Donna Marie hello. And if Angus said hello, he said Angus hello. And if you said hello, you would say your name, then hello after it. I think that is kind of the way that it works. So if it's something that your school or your group thinks they'd like to get involved in, please just email me at donnamarie@highlandradio.com. And we'll need to have those in by Friday, the 23rd of May. And that is pretty much our first episode back of Ours to Protect all wrapped up. Now, I need you, all of the young people in Donegal, to help me out. The next episode's going to be all about food. How do we grow it? Where does it come from? What can we do to make sure that it's not going to waste? I want to hear your questions, your opinion, and your ideas. So send me a voice note to the Highland Radio WhatsApp on 086 60 25000, or you can email in to donnamarie@highlandradio.com. If you want to listen back to this episode or any past episodes, you can go to the Ours Protect section of our website. You'll also find links to all the stuff that we were talking about during the show there as well. Finally, a huge thank you to Tara, Sophie, Freya and Owen for their input, and to Julie Corey, the Biodiversity Officer with Donegal County Council, and Angus Kennedy of Nature Northwest for their time. That's all from me. Until next time.
This is with Dunamarie Doherty on Highland Radio. The kids are in charge to explore all things sustainable. Ours to Protect is funded by Commissioner Mann with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Highland Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland.